Thanks, Keith. I don't know how to start, but, you know, I think Judith mentioned she came up after Mass one day and she said, "Have you ever read this book?" I said, "No." She said, "Do you know anything about conscience evolution?" I said, "No." You know, I know a little because Ginny used to tell me about it, you know, and I heard a couple of talks here about it. So she says, "Well, would you give a talk on one of the chapters?" I said, "No." She said, "Yes, you will." So I tried to put something together, and we have, thanks to Tom, we have a little PowerPoint presentation, but I don't know how to work it. He does. What Keith was saying, I think, just to begin with, I've met a lot of friends here in Santa Barbara, several of them. I'm looking for friendly faces here, but you all look friendly. And I could say that the reason I was able to go to a bunch of countries and do what I was able to do was because I had the opportunity to do so. And I think that everybody here, if you had the opportunity, you would have been there too. You know, it's just that different things happen in our lives. When I was thinking about this, I was just thinking, you know, the pearl of great price. We're looking for the treasure, the pearl of great price. And I guess this book and the chapter had something to do with it. And I believe he's trying to say that once we understand a little bit more about God, which you've been trying to do every week for I don't know how many years, we get closer to finding the pearl. And in my situation, I would have to say that I didn't look for the pearl. It looked for me. And it was not just one. It was several little bitty pearls that come into the treasure that you try to find. So I'll start with asking you, and I'm going to ask somebody here just to pass these around. I would like to ask you, you don't have to do it now. You can bring them back next week. And it's all anonymous stuff. If you could put down in your lives what you consider your pearls or your treasures. It's funny, when you do it, you know, and it's not anonymous. If your husband's there, of course you say, "Oh yeah, my happiest, my pearl is my husband." Or vice versa, my wife, you know. So, And again, it's just to kind of get some wisdom from you, because I really consider, I've been a lot of places, but I'm not very wise. You know, I kind of just do things off the cuff. And the people that I have met here, you're talking about questions after this? Well, I got news for you. We're going to ask Keith and John and a bunch of other people. I got a lot of questions about this stuff, let me tell you. So I'd like to begin, you know. I just found this online. You know how old that thing is? That oyster? Now, I don't know if it's true or not. Does 100 million years sound right? Does anybody know anything about oysters? Tom, you know anything about oysters? It says that thing's 100 million years old. And they haven't opened it yet, but the pearl in there is the size of a golf ball. Probably worth a fortune. So again, you know, we could start the slideshow. You know, in the chapter, it talked about weddings and the community of weddings. Yeah, Tom, you go ahead. You can just keep. Again, this is what we would like you to just kind of mark down. You don't have to do it now. You can go home and think about it. I had time to think about it. Go ahead, Tom. Now, just the last couple of days, I went, that's what I was doing in D.C., I went to my niece's wedding. And in the book, I remember John Newell mentioned about a wedding that they had in Scotland I think it was a monastery, where all the monks were involved, and the idea was communion. So you could just fire a bunch of pictures going there, John. Yeah. And that's my niece from Bolivia, illegal, you know. Most of my family's illegal. Now, here's another one. This is my daughter in Panama. And when I'm sure all of you who were married or have daughters that married, it is a communion. You keep going, Tom. Just keep firing it here. You know, some of the... this is my family in Panama, some of them. Go ahead. Now, you probably recognize some of these people here. Now, you know, the idea, once again, is to share. You know, if you have a wedding or you're in communion or any of our, even in the Catholic Church when you have sacraments, the idea is to share and to invite people and to have a good time. Well, let me tell you, those three ladies up there had a hell of a time in Panama. They had a happy hour every afternoon at 5. Again, the idea, it's a happy event. And in our lives, there are happy events. Yeah. Now, this picture here, culturing the pearl, the best way I think I can explain the pearl of grace is going into my own experience. It's the only way I could do it because I don't know much about this stuff again. That picture was taken in high school. It's a fake picture because I never studied at all. I have my books lined up there. That's me back at St. Joseph's Seminary in 1960, probably more or less. Okay, Tom. Here's our family, my mom, dad, and brothers and sisters. Now, as a good Irish mother, she wanted a priest, all right? And my brother went into the seminary before me, and then my other two went into the seminary, my twin and another. So we had four brothers in the seminary at the same time. It was a good education, and it was free. Now, I don't know if that's the reason my mom sent me there. But what happened is my older brother got thrown out in 1960. Some of you might have remembered this, some of the sports fans here. There was a basketball game on, the national championship between Ohio State and who else? Anybody a sports fan? Cal. And so four of they were all very, very smart guys, not like me, very good jocks, athletes. They went out of their rooms down to the little sports field we have. It was like a pasture, and they were listening to the game. They got back to their room, and the dean of discipline was looking around the corner, and he says, "Where were you, smoking?" That night, they threw them all out of the seminary. They brought them home on a train that same night. And my brother tells a story later that they went in, and my mother's an old Irish lady, very, very Catholic, and the priest was explaining why they threw them out. And she said, "You threw them out for what?" So again, I started to think. We were formed to believe everything that we were taught, and especially at that age. And so I started thinking, you know, this isn't right. And I remember I was breaking the windows. I was throwing rocks. They never caught me. But my other two brothers, in the meantime, were thrown out for different things. One was smoking down at the creek. The other one flunked Latin. So I figured I wasn't going to make it either. So what happened? You keep going, Tom. What happened is I met a fellow who was at Mary Knoll, Tom Brady, who actually, if you know anything about football, again, his son is a pretty good football player with the Patriots. He was a very close friend of mine. We went to grammar school. He was at Mary Knoll at the time, and he talked me into going to Mary Knoll. We were together for 9 years, and that's how, you know, in a way, I got to go to some of these countries because my brother got thrown out of the seminary. Once again, the pearl is seeking me. So at Mary Knoll and throughout, I'd say throughout our career, you can keep going, Tom. These guys here, those guys in the back, were a group in the seminary, the Yo-Yos. It was a rock group. We used to play Beatles songs. And at Mary Knoll, it wasn't like you were going to get thrown out for listening to a game. You had to do a lot worse. And so what I learned, and I think one of the pearls in my life, are personal relationships. And he mentions that in his book, I think. John, where does it say here? He says, the universe is unified through personal relationships. And I really feel that way all the way through my travels and everywhere I've gone. And I think you would feel the same way, you know? Where do we learn from? I mean, I don't learn from guys like me sitting up here and talking. I learn from you. You know, I pick Keith's mind, or I pick John's, or anywhere I went. So anyway, this is a group of people. I go, the guy in the middle is Brady, the guy that talked me in. Of course, he left before we finished college. He fell in love and left. So, and so we went through. All of those guys left, as a matter of fact. But what I'm trying to get at, they were the ones that educated me. So, you know, when we did a lot of work with Martin Luther King, we actually met him back then. We were in the Cicero March. I wouldn't have done that if it was myself. These are people that brought that out on me. You know, I would be out in the ball field playing today still. I probably still am. But, you know, they opened my mind because they had an idea. It was Vatican II. Okay, Tom, we keep rolling. And you know this guy. That's my wife, Mary, actually. But this guy, Roy Bourgeois. Yeah, another relationship. He was in Bolivia when I was in Bolivia. I was out in the Amazon, and he was right in the middle of a city. So we had different type of ministries. And military government, and they were killing kids, killed a lot of university kids. All trained at this. He didn't know nothing about the school back then. So, you know, we were very close friends. He was a little bit behind me in the seminary, but older. But again, learning from other people, personal relationships. Okay, Tom. Now here, you probably know one of the guys here too in this slide. You know the guy in the middle? Yeah, that's Keith. So again, getting involved, personal relationships, Roy. But you know, it's not just enough to listen or to hear. You go out and do it. And there's Keith. You know, we could have got arrested there. I got a kick. I do have the picture, but I didn't have time to put it in. When we were leaving Fort Benning after that manifestation, we were in a subway kind of a train. Where were we going? Back to the airport. Yeah. And Keith is just sitting there, you know, and he's got his cane there, and he's sitting underneath a sign. And it says, if you need a lawyer, you can, you know, and right away I said, geez, we could have gone thrown. We might have needed a lawyer there if we got thrown. Because a lot of people got thrown in jail for walking down the wrong street. I mean, they, you know, before we even got there. Anyway, getting involved in what you do. Okay, Tom. You probably know this lady, too. Now we're starting to go to Bolivia, and I would say sharing the culture with other people. You know who that is, no? Anybody know who that is? That's Ginny Cashman. Yeah. And she is in Bolivia, and it gives you a picture of what a beautiful country it is. So it wasn't hard to go to these places. You know, some people say, oh, you poor you. You're good. And again, you can keep going, Tom. Again, Ginny, you know, get involved in the culture. She went down with my wife and visited many years later. Keep going. Now, again, when we were in the seminary, this is right at ordination. That's Bishop Walsh. Some of you might have heard of him. He was in China for like 15 years when Mao Zedong, I can't even pronounce the guy's name, took over. And he had just gotten out. I mean, he's pretty frail. He had just gotten out, and we were getting ordained, so they took this picture, put it on the cover of Maryknoll magazine to get more money, I guess. But, again, you know, you were in a situation, and it was Vatican II. Now, let me just tell you a real quick story. You can go to the next slide, I think, Tom. I think that's Bolivia. Now, that's Bolivia, you know, in the realm of things. And I'll tell you the story about good Bolivia. Now, get out of here. The pearl chasing me, not me looking for the pearl. In the seminary during Vatican 2 days, it opened up. You know, you weren't going to get thrown out for much because everybody was leaving. I mean, we had our soccer coach used to say, there's no vacation from a vocation. No vic when we were going on summer vacation. Now, I'll never forget our yo-yo group that you saw when we were graduating from college and we were leaving. We had what they call a Gaudiamus. We used to have shows, nothing else to do. So we were singing, we gotta get out of this place if it's the last thing. So they went bananas. They didn't like that, the dean of discipline, but they couldn't do anything about it. Because, and throughout, and I've always learned, I guess because of the law, they had the strict law in the seminary, they couldn't do anything. I kept breaking the law, and I think I'd just do that today, because, you know, because it was so strict. But in Maryknoll, it wasn't, and a lot of people left. In our time, I think there was 400 that came into our class through the 9 years that we were in formation. And 12 made it. We called ourselves the Dirty Dozen. Now, I'm just wondering, you know, what, you know, I stayed in, a lot of people left. It might have been competitive. Well, I got this far. A couple of those guys in the picture, I remember, wanted to be called Father after they were ordained. You know, I really didn't care. You know, that wasn't an idea, but you made it, now call me Father. And then you get into the idea, well, you have a little power here. So we went to Bolivia. Now, let me tell you the story on that. I know I'm not going to probably finish because I got a lot of stories. During Carnival, when we were going to be ordained, one of my classmates was getting married in New Orleans. And he had left John Eagleson, who later became the editor of Orbis Books, which is a big, of Mary Knoll. And Jack had met a pretty little girl from New Orleans, and so I had a Buick, like a 19, I don't know, it's an old bomb I bought for $50. So we even had cars back then. So myself, a guy named Beast Cole, who has been in Idian Jaya in Papua New Guinea for 40 years, his sister, Big Red from Nebraska, five of us, and Jake Dunn from New York, we got in my car, we went down, we didn't have any good tires on it, they were all bald, so we borrowed the tires from the Superior General, but he didn't know it. The fella in the garage at Mary Knoll was an ex-con from Sing Sing. We used to play Sing Sing every year in basketball. That was part of our training. So once again, the pro. So we got the tires, and we went, and we had a hell of a time. We had a great time in Carnival. We did a lot of dancing, a lot of, and you know, we were going to go to another country. Might as well enjoy the United States. You make excuses, but anyway, when I was there, a very close friend of mine who was getting ordained with me, he thought he was my protector all through the seminary thing. He called and he says, "You're really screwed." He says, "Con," he said, they used to call me Con. He says, "Our assignments came out." And, you know, and he called everybody in, the Superior General, to give us our assignments, and you're not here. I was the only deacon that wasn't. Oh, no, myself and the Beast. He wasn't there either. So anyway, we didn't think, we got back, and, you know, we didn't really think, they weren't going to throw you out. You hope they wouldn't. And so I was standing at a bulletin board we had, and this big guy who was a missionary in Hawaii, you know, he was one of these, his name was Stankert. He says, "Hey, Keneally, the general," they call him, "the general wants to talk to you." He talked out of the side of his mouth. He thought he was tough. Okay, so I remember I went into the Superior General's office, John McCormick. He was like the president of IBM. Do we have any IBM presidents here that are really, you know, I mean, the guy could have made a lot of money. He was like a machine, so... "Good, sit down." You know, he didn't have time for anybody. He said, "How did you like Mardi Gras?" I said, "It was great." He said, "Good, now get out of here, Bolivia." That's all he said to me, as if he was giving me a punishment. And it ended up not being a punishment. So we can continue, Tom. This is kind of what I did, you know, in the first years of Bolivia. The farmers hadn't, you know, they were very much oppressed, and you can go through the whole thing. It's all through Latin America. And so I learned from them. You know, once again, you go down there and you're taught kind of paternalistically that you have the answers. So actually, I didn't have any answers. I didn't know how to farm. They were good farmers. The idea in the this is a picture taken back in the middle 70s, I think. That's me, the gringo, with the Burt Reynolds T-shirt on right there. And those are campesinos. Most of them are dead now, but who just barely eked out a living cutting, and they were subsistent farmers. Most of them didn't have any land. So that's what we did. We started colonization programs. You can keep going, Tom. Now, during that time, this is who I met. Now, this is my wife. It's hard to see. You probably can't see that. You can't make that. There she is again, yeah. So I, during the time of working in the Amazon, going through the little villages, three kids kind of just fell into my lap. I'll give you the story of one of them. Shane was my son, or it wasn't my son. He was born out in a little village in the Amazon of a very severe cleft palate. I was there with one of the Mary Knoll nuns who were great. And they... I got in after about 2 hours driving through the mud, and the guy says, "You got to take he was a leader in the community. "You got to take this child," he said, "and bring him back to the doctor because he's dying." So, of course, it happened all the time. So I put him in. He was burning up. He had 108 temperature. I threw him in the truck, you know, no blanket or anything. And we headed back, and we went to a Methodist hospital. The closest hospital to where we were was a Methodist. And the guy, the Bolivian doctor, he was a great guy. And he looked at me, and he took the kid and he by the feet, and he dumped him in a bucket of ice. That was the way they, Shane, they put him in a bucket, and he brought the temperature down. Those who are nurses are shaking their head. It's not a bad idea, you know, when they don't have anything else. Well, a couple of weeks later, you know, I left. This is not an uncommon event where you'd bring kids to the hospital. And the doctor said, he said, Padre, your son, tu hijo está mejor, which means your son's better. You got to come and get him because there's anyway. Long story short, I went to get him, and that was the end of it. That was Shane, so you can keep going. There he is. Now, again, that's how we traveled in Bolivia. This is actually after I left. We're kind of getting... And that's my father in the background. He came down to be the padrino of baptism. The godfather. Right, I'm sorry. The padrino, yeah. So my mom and him, and of course my mother, you know, she wasn't very happy about me leaving, and, you know, and I remember the old Irish, you know, you got to have one priest in the family. Anyway, I remember the first time I went back after 5 years, I just kind of mentioned to her before I was married, you know, Mom, you know, what would you say if I brought a little Indian princess home? She says, you better not. But anyway, when we had Shane, we had to bring him up to the States to get operated when he was one. He only weighed 8 pounds. And I had a friend in, once again, personal relationships. I had a friend in Sea Caucus, a fellow seminarian, Marion Oler, of mine, whose brother owned a hospital. So they put him in for a month, and anyway, we went to see my mom with a baby and my dad. And we went into San Francisco, got to the house. I could see that somebody was looking out the Venetian blinds, you know. And so my dad just came out, gave us a big hug. We went through the garage up in San Francisco. Those who know the houses there went up to... And my mom was in the room. So I went in. I hadn't seen her in like 5 years. I went in to give her a big hug. And she said, she's awfully dark, isn't she? And, of course, you know, there we go. You know, the idea... She was a great lady, but she's prejudiced. You know, that's the way she was brought up. And, you know, thank God we've met people that, you know, that got us involved in things like this. So anyway, we had two more. You can keep going, and that's what happened. There they are, the three of them. I think that's when I got married. And I'll tell you the story. The last day, it's all stories, isn't it? The last day that I was in Mineros, which is my little village, we had a house, and I didn't know it, but I told Keith this story. He said I should tell it to you. I had a house there, and in that night we didn't have any electricity. We used to wear, you know, these, I don't know if you remember, the old brake fluid cans? You know, they used to, they'd put a wick through those suckers, and then you'd light them, and that's the way you were able to read. So I was sitting there, I don't know what I was doing, and all of a sudden the door knocks. This is about 10 o'clock at night before I was going to hit the rack. And the general of Bolivia, the regional general, they call him, walked in, a guy named Chabot. He's a very spiritual type guy, like the guy who wrote this. And he came in and he says, how you doing, Dudley? And he had another guy with him who was actually, you know, a very nice guy. This guy was a little bit out of it. So he said, everything okay? I hear you're leaving, you know. I went around and told everybody in the area. I you know, some of them were all very, very old conservative. And they had the idea they were carrying their cross. And that's why they were there. They didn't like the people. They used to yell at them. Anyway. So he came in and he had an envelope. He says, we would like you to consider this. Okay. I opened it and it was a one-way ticket to Guatemala. See, their idea, again, you know, is we don't want anybody thinking bad of Mary. No, they didn't. I says, one-way ticket? You mean you want to send me there? They wanted me to leave Mary and the three children up there and go to Guatemala. I said, wait a minute. I mean, don't worry about it. It's all taken care of. We have people there. She'll be financially fine. The kids will get a good education. So the idea of thinking was different in the church. And I think it's still there. You know, you look at cover-ups and you look at what's going on now and the power and stuff. They just didn't get it, you know. And I think, thank God, you know, for Mary. And that was one of the pearls, actually. And as you mentioned, as it says here in the chapter, sometimes it costs. You got to pay the price of the pearl. And, you know, I loved what I was doing, and basically because the people trusted you. You got to hand it to the old Jesuit missionaries that went down there in the movie mission. The people trusted a priest there, you know. And that was the way I could do a lot of work with them in such a short time with the cooperatives. I was able to get in, and they didn't have any disconfidence in me at all, you know. So we can go. I'm trying to think where I am here. You know, and as far as the union goes, I'll just skip around. In this book, it's just amazing how such a small... The author talks about his daughter, remember, who went to India? And this was the other side of her soul. That it was always in her soul that she would go to India and dance. And when she danced, she did the dance of the earth. And she pounded the earth with her bare feet, and that's where she felt the spirit. And it's funny, my daughter went to India to the same school that she went to. I got it here. I called her last night. And did that type of a dance. She studied 6 months there. Now, I don't know if the girl's still there, but, you know, again, trying to get the other side of my soul was not Bolivia. It just happened. You know, it looked for me, and it was an opportunity, and thank God for Mary Knoll. You know, they got me there, and that's what started the ball rolling and was, you know, it was what makes me happy. So we'll keep going. These are the children. You can just go. These are some of the... Now, this is the Campesinos. This is the little villages where we would work. Actually, that's my son. And my the kid in back is going to marry my daughter. He just... But we went there a couple of years ago. And these guys were young men when I started. And the idea was just to get them to make enough money to take care of their kids, and their kids wouldn't die. The child mortality rate was high. So this was community. And they're talking about community here. These people, if they had to build a house, they all get together and they do it. They wouldn't charge. They had and in the Altiplano especially, they had something called the Aina. I think it's Aini or Aina, where there was no money involved in a lot of these. They would trade and they would give you a chicken and you would help them with this. And so it was a little simpler life back then, the economics and everything. But that gives you an idea. Now, I like this because that guy there, you can't see him. That's me and that's his grandson. When we started in this little village in the Amazon, we had nothing. There was no roads. It took us like, oh, I don't know. We went through with a tractor and we opened the road with chainsaws and stuff. We got there, slept there. There was no houses. And now, 30 years, I guess it was, since I'd seen him, 30 or 30-something years, now he has his own small farm. His kids went to the university. He still works the farm. And that's, you know, this is 4 generations, actually. It's me, who's a generation more than he is, him, and then his son, who's in the university, and then that's his son's kid. But it was a satisfying thing that you could see. He had a, you can keep going, Tom, he had a diversified phone. Now we're going to get into something else. In here, it talks about, what is it? It's called the spirit of the earth. No, John? Anima Mundi. Now, this is interesting because when I was there, we used to say Mass and we used to baptize. Just like, but I spent most of my time in the social type before I left. And then I spent all my time. But this fella here is an Incan priest. He's also a deacon in the Catholic Church. So just recently, after 70 years, Mary Knoll has been in Bolivia for 7 years, they're starting to mix the culture, the old Incan and the Aymaran culture, with Christianity. Because they have what they call chalia. You can keep going, Tom. And, you know, I'd like to explain it. I wish I knew more. But everything is important for the... This is coca leaves, you know. Once again, they have so much tradition and so much medicinal purposes. You can go back just one, Tom. So when we went a couple of years ago, they were having this mass by this old Incan priest, and it was a mixture, which was great. And it was exactly... The Bolivians believe, if you can go back one more, believe in the Pachamama, which is Mother Earth. And it's actually the Pachamama. Pacha in Quechua means... Pacha means universe, actually. So everybody, like the campesinos I worked or the ones in the Altiplano, they depend on the earth. They depend on life from the earth. So they had these ceremonies, and we could capture a little bit here, where the guy, you know, he was showing us and explaining everything. You know, there were a lot of nuns and priests there. He was explaining what they do. They do it every first Friday of the month, and they do it before Carnival. On Tuesday of Carnival, which is a big celebration in all of Latin America. And the idea is to appease Mother Earth. It's a sacrifice to her. And it's all about what he's talking about in this book. It's really eerie. I mean, it's all about the spirit. It's all about the universe. It's all about everything being in harmony. And I have a little bit of it on tape, but I don't know if you can hear it or not. He's explaining it, and You can just keep going, Tom. Yeah, and he was explaining it. And there was a guy translating it, you can probably see. And they all came and put it to the Mother Earth. And then they would burn it afterwards. And they go around with the chalice with the coals. And anyway, it was so interesting. And it was all about what this book's about. The harmony of the earth and the universe. And this is something that goes back thousands of years in the Aymaran and the Inca culture. And it's something that the church originally just thought was a lot of superstition. And we're trying to get rid of. And it's just opening up to it. I wish you could hear it, but it's actually a ceremony that was really beautiful. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is Mary Knowles finally trying to get involved in the actual culture and the traditions. How are we doing on time? Okay, Tom? Okay, now, let me explain this. Again, you know, when I was a priest, I was able to work. And one of the things that I told Mary, and I actually said goodbye to my wife. You know, I said, I just got to continue. And it was like I was, the old cowboy, slip out the back, Jack, get a new key, Lee, 50 ways to leave your lover. So I had a little excuse there. And she didn't buy it, obviously. But one of the reasons was, honestly, that I didn't think that I could do the work that I was doing as a priest. Wrong. I was so wrong. So I made the decision. I said, and the decision was helped by her because she was taking care of these three kids. I mean, they wouldn't have been anywhere, And she got a job in the States. She died. Her mother and father died when she was 18. It's the story of all of Latin America. She raised her eight brothers and sisters. She was the oldest. So she was good at being a mother, and I gave her three more, But so she said, she got tired. And so I had to, there's a crude saying, but I had to do it, I had to act, make a decision, and that's, I think, what we're talking about here, too. You had to pay a price. And so I left the priest. I wasn't really, but I didn't think that I continued doing it. But again, the pearl followed me. I got a job with International Voluntary Services, and I kept doing the same thing with the farmers for another 20 years in that area. And then went to La Paz. And then got into health, and then eventually emergency response into Afghanistan and Darfur. And so that took me everywhere, But it was, this picture are two ladies. Mary, when she came, the poor people really didn't mind her coming in. They used to call her the Padre's wife because they didn't have any kind of conception of celibacy. They're very simple people. She started a group of women that are still, this is 35 years ago, built the place for them, and they're still active today. And what they do is they started a business amongst all that. They couldn't read or write. And so this is when we came back a few years ago, and we were driving into their little center there in a small village there. And this is how they greeted her. So you can see, and this is actually what they did. She built this place for them. But she was checking their blood level. For diabetes. That's what she does here in Santa Barbara. So she went down with her, and it was just like she never left. And again, what I'm trying to say, the relationships that you build, and it was that I was able to do much, much more. She did a lot more than I did. Again, as far as helping people and as far as being there for people. And she allowed me to do it. She doesn't anymore, but she allowed me that. Again, this is, I think it's the same slide. I really like this. Now here we're getting into Darfur, which was a completely different type of situation. As you know, the genocide, and what I saw, what I got from Darfur, was how the humble people. You can keep going, Tom. Were I could tell you stories, and I'm sure you heard of them. I'll tell you, I would talk to the women. They were in their villages, and as you know, the Janjaweed, who were Arab Muslims, and the people that were attacked were African Muslims. They had, against its religion, they didn't think the Janjaweed didn't think that they were Muslim enough, you might say, that they weren't strict Islamics, because they had, like the Bolivians, they had their animism, they had their earth and everything because they're farmers. Anyway. They burned the villages. In cases, the woman would be, it's hard to believe, would be breastfeeding, and they would in the horses. They all came in horses, or some of them came in pickup trucks, the government. And they would take a baby that was breastfeeding and throw them in the fire. They would do things like this. Now, I have an experience. I had a picture. I don't know what I did with it. I couldn't find it. But I was out in one of the camps. What they did is, eventually, they came from their villages, and they're still in these camps today. They cannot leave, especially the women in the camps, or they will be raped again, and the Janjaweed control the area. They're, how can you say it? They're cattle. They're cattle people. You know, they're nomads, and the other people are farmers. So once again, the diversity, the tribal things, the broken world that we have. But again, what I got from these people, I tell you, this one, I never forget, I was out with some people from USAID who used to fund. USAID is the development aid of the U.S. government, who used to fund our work. You know, and you had to get money if you were going to help them, so you had to deal with them. And they were out visiting, and this family came in. And it was after the fact. I mean, all the villages had been burnt. People were in the camps. We were feeding them. We were doing what we could for them. And this family, a bunch of families came in. They had just been attacked. They were in a village pretty far away, and they'd walked like for a day, day and a half. And what happens, you know, and I don't want to shock you, but it does show you what the book again says about the broken world. I don't have to go to Darfur to see it. We see it here, and maybe less. But this little girl, 12 years old maybe, you know, what they would do, they would go into the village, they would burn it, and they would look for the men. They would rape the daughters in front of the fathers and then slit throats of the men. They would kill the men with their swords. As a matter of fact, they have one here. But you know, it's something that you can't believe, but I was right there because I had heard stories. And they took me, and you know, the Muslims are very, very, how would you say, but they wanted me to see their daughter's back. They raped this little girl, and then they marked her like as a brand with their sword. And on her back was a big scar, and it was still had the powder that the people used. It was out of a leaf. They didn't have any medicines, but it was still on her back. And I took a picture of it. So I could send it, you know, to show people what was going on there. But this happened so much, you know. The idea they would kill any boys that were like under or over 10 or 11, so they wouldn't have to deal with the revenge factor. So they would kill the father and the boys, and usually they would rape the women and then let them go. But of course, you know, they were killing the women too, because in that society, you know, you only get married if you're a virgin, and so that opened up another whole can of worms that we had to deal with as far as what we call protection program for the children and for the women who were affected. But you can keep going. This gives you an example. You know, you don't see any men, and this is a little village where the lady actually lived before they burned it with her children. This is some of the camps where we would distribute blankets and all the stuff that they would. But you can keep going. What I'm trying to say, through this all, you know, the lesson they taught me and the lesson I learned as far as searching for the pearl of great price is a lesson of hope. I mean, imagine if this happened to me with my family, or it happened to my wife or any of you. You wouldn't probably want to live. I mean, we get depressed at little things, but these people, for somehow, their faith in their God and their prayers to Allah got them through it. I mean, they were able to cope through this stuff. And, you know, talking about fixing a broken world, you wonder if you really did it. You know, I don't think so. I mean, you look around, they're still in the camps. They still can't go out and get grass for their fires or whatever they use for the fires without getting raped and sometimes killed. So this is just some of the stuff we did, like education. This lady didn't know how to read or write, so we had education classes for them. Work programs. You see, most of them are women again. We would have work programs, and they would be building the walls and doing all the brickwork, and we would find this so there would be an injection of funds into their family economy, and they could take care of it while they were in the camps. Oh, here's what I wanted to show you. Another thing I learned from the people, no matter where I was the generosity. In Bolivia, I remember when I first started, I was visiting a little community, and I stopped, and it was lunchtime. They had one chicken. in the backyard. They killed the damn thing, and they gave them to me, you know, to eat because I was a padre. That's the way they were. They didn't seem to worry about tomorrow. You know, they didn't hoard anything because they didn't have anything to hoard. So, again, that whole idea that the earth was going to produce for them, that things are in harmony, that it was going to work out. But that picture's funny because at the end of my stay, from there I went to Iraq, of all places, because they needed somebody there for the work they were doing. And they gave me this sword. Here it is. And the idea was, it was to protect you. This is what they take, and it's a sign of protection. And you can see the lifestyle they have to live sometimes. They need it. But, you know, they really don't use it. These African tribes were actually very, very peaceful. That's probably why they got run over by the nomads. But this was a sign of protection for their families. And the man, when he went up to get married, he would wear this. And, you know, the generosity that they have, these aren't cheap, actually. The guy made it and gave it to me, and because, you know, I had worked there with him for 13 months, and it was just, I found this everywhere I went. Whatever they had, the little that they had, they would share it with you. And I think, you know, I know we're running a little short in time. Yeah, and that's what I want to get to. We could just run through, Tom, is that the end of it? Or a presentation of Afghanistan, which was a whole nother situation from... You can see how young the women were married there. You just go real fast. Now this, let me just show you the back. This, again, are women. Like Sudan, these were all widows. And we had a wheat seed. All these people came back from Iran or Pakistan because they had fled during the Taliban. And they were all farmers again, so we were distributing wheat. And they were all women. Because their husbands weren't around with all the wars. There was no, you know, very few little men they got. But you can keep going, Tom. But you can see the culture. You know, it's pretty much the same in Bolivia as making. That's what I want to do is kind of the comparison. There's a wheat seed we distributed. Go ahead. No. You know, that's, once again, the way they plowed the land. You know, it's pretty primitive. That's the Himalayas in the background. This is the U.S. ambassador. I could tell you a story about him, but I won't. You know? Yeah. And that's one of our distribution points. Now this is, go ahead, Tom. This is a price that you had to pay to be there. These are landmines. And we were, you know, actually I was there in 2001, not long after the Twin Towers got hit. And let me give you an explanation. See, talk about the lifestyles. Again, these are old vineyards. They had great vineyards in Afghanistan. That guy, he's got a screwdriver and a mask. And he's trying to find landmines. What they do is they poke the side of them, you know. But they find them, and so it was one of the things we supported, trying to get rid of the landmines. But you know, again, I don't know how that got in there. That's Bolivia. Go ahead. Now you know this is. That's me. I'm not a terrorist. I was just goofing around. And this, once again, the war torn. Now it's like 30 years of war in Afghanistan. We got just a couple more time, and then I'll explain what I'm trying to do. Most of the kids there that stepped on the landmines were kids. They weren't, you know, they weren't soldiers or anything. So, and I'll tell you, okay, that go keep going, Tom. Just one more. Okay, I'll just tell you this. You know, one of the things that I'd like to bring out is that if we have a treasure, and I really felt, you know, that through my life I've been very, very fortunate. And the treasure that I have is our little pearls. It's not one thing, you know. You know, if my wife was here, I'd tell her it was my wife. But, you know, it was. And my family and the kids and the farmers and the personal relationships and Tom Brady who told me, you know, go to Mary Knoll. And all the people that taught you and you people, you know. When I look at... When you get a pearl or you get a treasure, you don't hold it, you know? I forget what Treasure Island is about, but I'm sure all of you guys remember. But, you know, somebody wins the lottery, you know, they don't want anybody to know about it because they don't want to get rid of that thing, want to hold on to it. You find something, you hoard it, you know? And I think, I know one, you know, when I was talking to through a translator in Sudan, and this might be through Christianity too, a lady was telling me, how do you get through it with all the things that happened to you? And she says, I just, and this is a poor woman in Sudan, I just think in my mind that Allah is cradling me in His arms. This is their, simple. And I'm there, and then I'm at peace, Then I know, all this stuff that happened, I'm at peace, and I just go there, In a way, it's an escape, but sometimes you need an escape. But what I'm saying is that what I found working with the people at St. Anthony's, and I'm sure many of you people are the same, is that where you are, and doesn't really make a difference. If you're in Sudan, I'm sure any of you who had the opportunity would have done this, probably better than I did. But you have an opportunity here right now. I see a lot of you working with the homeless. You're working in politics, trying to get the right people. Your church groups are doing this, you're doing that, and that's what it's all about. Because you can't find God, no matter, if He's a molecule flying. I never understood this. I'm going to ask Keith afterwards about how, I was trying to explain to my brother-in-law and sister-in-law who are in Bolivia, the illegals. I was trying to prepare a little bit. God's really, we're not made by God. We're made of God. We're all God. And they look at me, Yeah, the molecules came. I said, there was a big bang. And they looked at me, I couldn't explain it very well, Okay, we'll just go through these real quickly so you get an idea what Afghanistan's like. A lot of orphans. These are all orphan kids because of the wars. And you see the diseases they get, the skin diseases. I forget what they call it. The health people would know. And again, what we did is water for them a lot. I don't know how Casey got in there. That's my son. I throw these in there from time to time. This is a farmer. This is a great shot. Actually, the U.S. Embassy asked me to send this, and this went to the White House. They were trying to show that they were doing stuff for Afghanistan, not just shooting them. Yeah, that's public transportation. Tom could go through it. This I loved. It looked like an American Indian. No? Up there, and this is the way the people live. Some of them lived in caves. It's much poorer than... These are Taliban. I'm not kidding you. When we first worked, there was no problem with the Taliban. We went into their villages. They look like it, don't they? We went into their village, did water system. They were great. I ate with them. But after the military came and started shooting them, and I'll tell you one quick story. I got a lot of them. I know Tom's giving me the hook. I used to go to what they call a PRT, which was a military base, but mixed with people that were doing humanitarian work. And I stayed one night. It was way out in the border of Pakistan and Afghanistan. And some of the soldiers were coming in. They were kids. Most of the kids that were there were probably there because they couldn't do anything else. This kid came in, and all the soldiers were sitting there, and they were playing poker. I was kind of just sitting there watching them. And he said, 7 to 10. And I looked at my watch. It wasn't 7 minutes to 10. And what he was saying is, we just killed between 7 and 10 people in the village. And they went out, and they were killing people, And again, were these people shooting at them? Were these people dangerous? I don't know. You really don't know. So, anyway, that's some of the stuff. That was a famous guy, Afghan guy. And these are the projects we did, as you can see. It was mostly health and... And again, the relationships with the people, they were great. What you hear in the news media about, Afghan and the terrorist, this lady didn't like me taking her picture, that lady in the back there, and I shouldn't have. Sometimes you have to be careful. She wasn't very happy about that. She was covering her face up. But again, it's a war-torn, and this is a little baby that was burnt, by one of the bombs and stuff that were coming in. Anyway, yeah. So I'm sorry if I ran a little bit over, and I'm sorry if I was all over the place. But again, I think the bottom line is what I'm trying to say is we have a pearl, and it's not just one. It is one, I guess, our belief in God. And I think mine, if you put everything together and the different countries and the people and my friendships, the relationships you got, you people, that I know at St. Anthony's, you put it all together, it comes up to I'm very happy with my life, I've not done everything right. I've done a lot of wrong, actually. I blew it there, sometimes culture and stuff like that. But I'm happy that, all these things, these pearls and treasures, it gives me life. And, you know, I think that's bottom line. What my pearl and my treasures, I had the opportunity to live. And many of you had the opportunity to live many, many more years than me. And I know you've done a lot in your life, too, you know. The little things that you do every day, that's what it's about, you know. And just your search for theology and to learn more about God and the way it, you know, probably is and probably was is amazing, you know. And that what brings you all together and the unity and all that stuff. So I'll end up there, and I want to thank Judith. Oh, Judith, where are you? Where's your costume? All right, you can get it during the coffee break. All right. All right, thanks a lot.